This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to the basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
You're listening to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Got a big show today talking about four different topics. We're going to go rapid fire. We're going to talk Wake Forest. Then we're going to talk about the Miami dumpster fire. We're going to do a third segment of looking around the nation just briefly. And then we'll take a short bit of time at the end for segment four with a little bit of a recruiting update and a little bit of recruiting discussion as we head into the second quarter of the season. So let's go ahead and get it started talking about the Wake Forest game here in segment one. And the first thing to say is there's really not a whole lot to talk about in this game in terms of, you know, we could talk about keys to the game and what's Florida State going to do to win this game. And let's be honest, Florida State's going to win this game. There is a reason that they play the game, but this is not 2006. This is not 2007. The gap between these two teams is still gigantic. And Wake Forest has taken a good step forward on offense this year. I mean, last year their offense is one of the worst in the country. And their defense was actually pretty good last year. Their defense was maybe probably about the third best defense that Florida State played last year. But they've lost a good bit of talent from that defense last year. And so they're not as good defensively as they were last year. They're a step forward offensively. But I think overall they're basically what they have been in terms of talent, and that means that the gap between these two teams is gigantic. And of course, the big thing everybody's talking about coming into this game is the weather. The weather is going to be nasty. It's going to be wet. It's going to be rainy. They're playing in a monsoon. I mean, I think this is going to be, it's not going to be quite at the level of the Chris Ricks era Louisville game on a Thursday night where they played in a tropical storm, but there's going to be a lot of rain. And the question really coming into the game time is going to be how much wind there is. Now, the reason for that is that you hear a lot about people talking about, you know, playing with a wet ball and that sort of thing. And, oh, this is a disadvantage for an offense that passes a lot. Honestly, in wet weather, I don't think that's that big of a deal. Wet weather is not a big deal. Playing in the rain for a passing offense shouldn't be much of a factor in terms of, it shouldn't be a disadvantage at all. In fact, I'm of the opinion that passing offenses in wet weather in many cases actually benefit. So you hear people talking about, oh, you know, it's gonna rain, you better run the ball. Well, yeah, you got to run the ball anyway. But the time when you have to worry about weather in terms of a passing offense is not when it's wet. It's not in the rain. The reason for that is that when you're playing offense, you know where you're going. Wide receivers know where they're going to be cutting. They know they can set a guy up this way and they can cut that way. And really, the throwing and catching with a wet ball, that's okay. I mean, you might have a drop or two here and there, but that's not all that much different. I mean, you're still throwing and catching the football. What changes is footing. And the wide receivers know where they're going. Quarterback knows where the wide receivers are going. The people who have to react and respond really quickly in bad footing conditions are the defensive backs. And that puts them at a disadvantage. So in a lot of cases, and I think this is something that a lot of people just don't understand, in a lot of cases, rain and wet conditions, you know, a little bit suboptimal footing is better for the passing offenses because those receivers and those quarterbacks, they know where they're going and they can set guys up a little bit, force them to react and benefit from some poor footing issues with the secondary. But, you know, we don't know exactly how much wind there's going to be coming in on Saturday. And I think that's the thing that we need to pay a little bit of attention to in terms of how much that affects the passing offenses. Again, with tropical storm, I guess hurricane now, Joaquin, in the Gulf, the question is how much that's going to impact any wind at this point. I don't know that it's going to affect a whole lot on Saturday. So, you know, I think overall the impact on the game in terms of the actual play calling and what the teams are able to do is probably not going to be as big as people might expect. It's going to be sloppy, but you know, that's football. You're going to have that and I don't think that they're going to pass any less, or that Florida State is going to necessarily adjust what they're doing offensively because of the weather in that case, unless there is more wind than I think there's forecasted to be at this point. In any case, Wake Forest can't run the football, and they're certainly not going to run the football on Florida State's front. So this basically turns out to be, it should be good prep for Miami, because Miami, they are going to be able to run the football, but Florida State's already played some teams that can run the football, Boston College and some others that, you know, up front, they give you some stuff to work on the defensive front. But Florida State has yet to play anyone who can pass the ball with a pulse at all. And Wake Forest, they're not really good at passing the ball, but they do it a lot. They throw the football a little over 41 times per game, ninth nationally in attempts per game passing wise. This is good prep for Miami for Brad Kaya next week, especially if their starting quarterback Walford plays. If Wake Forest starting quarterback Walford plays, then you're looking at they're going to be throwing it pretty much all game. Kendall Hinton, his backup, who played against Indiana. Again, Walford has an ankle injury that he's having to get over. Kendall Hinton, if he plays, is more of a runner, so you'll see some read option things and things like that out of the gun more. But again, they're going to throw the football a bunch either way. When you look at Hinton against Indiana, for example, I mean, especially once they got behind, Hinton has thrown the football 86 times. And against Indiana, he threw it, 46 times against Indiana. So it's not exactly like they're going to stop throwing the football around with him on the field. It just means that you have to worry a little bit more about a guy who can move around once he has it, or once he doesn't see what he likes downfield. So in any case, this is a good opportunity for a secondary led by Jalen Ramsey that is going to want to play some teams that want to throw the football. And Florida State actually doesn't have a whole lot of good passing teams on the roster or on the schedule this year. So this is a good opportunity for a secondary that so far has been playing as well as any in the country to test themselves against a team that at least wants to put the ball in the air. So that I think is one of the main things to watch, to see if Florida State's able to get the pressure that they want in the passing game. Because again, Wake Forest is most likely going to be in long yardage situations most of the day, and we'll see, you know, what kind of pass rush Florida State's able to get. It'll be interesting also to see. I'll be watching for Lorenzo Featherston on the field. This is his first game back from a minor knee surgery at the end of camp and at the beginning of the year. He missed a little bit more time than they'd hoped from him, but he is back, and he brings so much explosiveness and length to that edge that he's a guy that they're going to want to get on the field, particularly in pass rush situations. So brings a different dimension in those situations. So it'll be interesting to see what Florida State's able to do in the pass rush in the secondary against a team that really wants to line up and throw the ball. The other thing that I think, you know, is worth watching in this game is Florida State traditionally under Jimbo Fisher has historically played more freshmen coming out of byes. And so this is coming out of the bye week. They've had a chance to go through more stuff with those freshmen, with the young talent, to get them a little bit more ready for this stretch run. And it'll be interesting to see whether or not we see more of George Campbell and, say, Derwin James and some of these guys, some of the freshmen waiting in the wings. And I'd even put somebody like Pig Harrison in that same category, where he's also an inexperienced guy. This has been a pattern for Jimbo Fisher going back to when he took over as head coach, that he will stick with established guys, and then that bye week is really big for preparing some of the younger talent to step on the field and contribute more later in the year. And the bye came a little early this year, but I think we're still going to see a little bit of that. And obviously we're going to see that at the running back position with Jacquez Patrick now taking over for Mario Pender as the number two running back, splitting that with Jonathan Vickers. Those two guys are going to get a lot of carries in this game, I think. I don't think that they're going to want to run Dalvin Cook 30 times against a Wake Forest team where they really don't need to do that. And the week before a Miami game where they may need to do that. So, you know, and particularly on a wet track, I mean, that's where a wet track does potentially hurt you, is potentially turning an ankle or having some problem with the footing that causes some injury. So I think this is a situation where best case scenario, if you're Florida State, you get up by 14, 21 points early and you just go ahead and roll with Patrick and Vickers at the tailback position. And you start to roll in a lot of that young talent to give them some stuff to work on this week. And to give yourself some rest and some extra depth and confidence going into the Miami game. So, you know, I think that's another thing to watch, is how many extra young players or how many extra reps go to young players in this game. The final change that's really worth watching in this game, the final thing that's really I'm going to have my eye on, especially in the first half, you know, right away early in the game, is it appears that Ryan Hofeld, who is the center who took over for Austin Barron last year, as a freshman last year when Austin Barron got hurt, and then was ultimately displaced by Cam Irving after he was pretty much ineffective through the first that middle portion of the season last year on that offensive line, really got he didn't play well last year. He got pushed around a good bit. It's pretty light in the pants. It was too early. He was not ready to play as a freshman. But he was dinged up a little bit coming out of camp, actually came into camp a little bit dinged up, and then, wasn't ready to contribute early in the year. So Florida State has started Corey Martinez in the first three games at that center position. But I reported this on the Noel Digest boards, and we talked about it a little bit on this podcast, about a week and a half ago, that I'd been told that Ryan Hofeld was actually the answer at center, which my response, as I'd said before, was, oh, come on, man, are you really seriously? I mean, I don't believe it after what I saw last year. I'm just not sure that kid's ready or able to play at the Florida State level. And I was told, no, he's actually, this is a kid that worked his tail off all summer. He did not take well to being pushed around last year. He's a guy that did everything he could to improve between that freshman and sophomore year. And he did take a big leap forward, and he's been the best guy. He's just not been healthy. Well, we're going to see a little bit this week about how ready Hofeld's going to be. Now, again, against Wake Forest, you're not going to see everything that you want to see in terms of being able to see whether or not he's going to hold up against better interior defensive linemen at this point. You know, this is not Notre Dame of last year who really, really pushed him around quite a bit. But we will get to see whether or not there's some improvement at that position. And the one thing I think is going to be clear is Hofeld has no problems with accurate snaps, which was an issue against Boston College, and I think that's why he's getting the start here, is that FSU has had some difficulty with accurate snaps at a few points in the first couple games, the first three games, and when you have a quarterback who's already struggling to process as quickly as what you'd like in a new system, when you take his eyes off the field because he has to catch an errant snap, that makes things that much more difficult. So I suspect that's a big part of the equation here. But either way, Ryan Hofeld's going to get his first start of the season, and it's going to be interesting to see how much progress has been made between a very underwhelming freshman season, which admittedly, I mean, he'd tell you that it was way before he was ready to play at the Division I or BCS level. But we'll see whether or not there's been a whole lot of change there as he's gotten older and moved into his sophomore year. Either way, there's not a whole lot that I'm going to do. I'm not going to waste your time here talking about what Florida State needs to do, you know, the keys to the game or anything. But there are a number of interesting subplots to see. I think Florida State rolls in this game. I'm going with something around 38-3. In this game, I think Wake Forest is going to have trouble moving the football at all in this game, and it's going to be interesting to see if that does hold out, because I think this Florida State defense is starting to hit its stride, and I just don't think that there's that Wake Forest has the pieces to threaten what Florida State where Florida State has some potential weaknesses on defense. So I think Florida State rolls in this game. Let's go ahead then and move into segment two. Again, this is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio of Esporto Channel. I'm your host, Jason Staples, and this is let's go ahead and talk about the Miami situation. Miami embarrassed themselves and the conference yet again on national television on a Thursday night last night. And at this point, you've got to think that that Al Golden's job is on absolute life support. If that if that game didn't cost him his job, I think another loss to Florida State will. So ultimately, I think this staff is going to be is going to be coaching to save their jobs. I think the Florida State game is the last chance for Golden to save his job and for his assistants to save their jobs in this regard. I'm not sure that they even can, but I'm not even sure that winning against Florida State in this case would save their jobs. But I do think that that's the way that they're going to be coaching this. I think that there's going to be an air of desperation in the program. Obviously, you're going to see the players at Miami step up. The drop passes that you saw against Cincinnati last night, you are not going to see against Florida State. Those guys are going to catch everything in their radius. They're going to play. You're going to see that defensive line play inspired football. That's going to be the best game that Miami's going to play all year, and it's going to be interesting again to see what they're going to do against a Florida State team that is significantly more talented than that Miami team. But of course, Miami will have prepped for this game as its Super Bowl. This is their national title game, and this is what the coaching staff has been pointing to and preparing for all season. Going back to the spring. So it'll be interesting to see what's going to happen in that game. Either way, I think Al Golden probably is not the head coach at Miami at the end of this year after having lost that Cincinnati game. I just don't see any way that I don't see them winning the Coastal. And if they lose to Florida State, I think he's done. So then that brings up the interesting question of who does Miami bring in? Who could Miami attract to a job that has lost some of its luster? I mean, the Miami job is not a top five or even top 10 job in the country at this point. I mean, if you go down to Miami's facilities, they don't match up with Florida State or Florida or even, you know, Duke is making facility upgrades right now, and they're ahead of Miami where in terms of facilities. And then when we talk about budget and administrative support and some of these things, you cannot have success in major college football at this point without really good assistance. And I think that's one of the biggest problems that Miami has right now, is that you look at their coaching staff, and I think Coley's a pretty good coach at offensive coordinator, but I'm not sure who else on that staff I would want. Who else on that staff as an assistant coach would be a top staffer at some other school? I mean, Alabama came in and took Mario Cristobal, their offensive line coach, a couple of years ago, and they've not been the same since. So, I mean, who do they have as assistants that you really want? And that's going to be a problem regardless of who they hire. And that's something that if I were considering this, if I were, say, a head coach, a hot head coach at a mid-major, I would want the Miami job. Partly because the Miami job, even at its best, back in the 80s, was a great stepping stone job. I mean, nobody really stayed there that long. I mean, Jimmy Johnson stayed there long enough to parlay it into the Cowboys job. And then Dennis Erickson stayed long enough to take himself to the NFL. And then, you know, you go down the list and nobody was there really that long. Same thing with Butch Davis. But they do have as much access to talent as any job in the country. And for me, as a coach, I want to win. I'm not as interested in short term, how much money can I make in my contract? And I know, yes, everybody cares about money. But at a certain point, when you're making over, say, $1 million a year, how much more marginal benefit is it really to make another $500,000? Yes, I know it's $500,000. But once you have that much, I know people who have that much. And once you do have that much, the marginal return, the marginal benefit in terms of lifestyle and all that is actually not as big as you might think. You don't notice it as much. Now, what you do notice is the absence of private jets and things like that for recruiting and all that. But if I were one of those mid-major coaches, or, you know, a retread or whoever might take that Miami job, I would very seriously consider negotiating a limited salary for myself, but pushing a few hundred thousand dollars extra into the assistant pool. That's how I would negotiate it out. I would want to make sure that I can get top assistants, top coordinators and top position coaches, and put myself in a position where I can win. Because I know that if I do that, if I do win, I'm going to get a raise. And my assistant coaches are going to be able to basically keep the packages that they've already got in terms of the money that's already in that assistant pool. So, you know, a smart coach would go down there and say, you know, I could get $2.5 million once they agree to hire him and they say, you know, we'd like to offer you $2.5 million or whatever. A smart coach says, okay, I'll take that $2.5 million, but I actually only want 1.5 of it. I want that other million pushed into my assistant coach's salary. And then I want a very incentive-laden contract on the other side of it. I want major boosts for winning the ACC, for winning the ACC Coastal, for making a New Year's Day or New Year's Eve bowl game. I want major boosts in my contract for that, and I want the extra money up front in terms of my contract to go to the assistant pool so that I can attract some really good assistants. So that's just how I would treat it. If I would take that job in a heartbeat if I were at any mid-major or any other place like that, because I think I can win there. I know I can get if I'm a good recruiter, if I can get a decent staff down there, I know I can get guys on campus. So that's where the job, it's not a top five, not a top 10 job at this point, but it is attractive enough to be interesting, even to really good candidates. And this is where, you know, if I'm thinking on the Miami side, who am I looking at? Maybe the first name that I would call, first guy that I would call is Tom Herman over at Houston. First year coach at Houston. He was the offensive coordinator at Ohio State. You know, in 2 years, I don't know that he considers the Miami job, but if you offer it to him after year one at Houston, it is a step up, pretty significant one. And it is a situation where he's able to have access to the talent to run the stuff that he wants to run. Now, Herman would be at the very top of my list of guys, or near the top of the list of guys to potentially replace Jimbo Fisher if he left Florida State as well. But I think you might be able to pull a Tom Herman at Miami just because of the timing. So I would look at Tom Herman. I think Greg Schiano naturally gets a phone call. I mean, he turned the job down the last time from what I understand. But I think this time around, he's not in a situation where he has NFL opportunities the way that he did. He's not situated at Rutgers at this point the way that he was. And, you know, if he wants to get back into coaching, he's got deep roots in the Miami area. And he's a charismatic guy who I think works better in the college ranks anyway than he did in the pros. So I think Greg Schiano is a guy you talk to. I think Mario Cristobal probably gets an interview. He's a guy that, again, has experience in that Florida area, and I think Cristobal would take that job in a heartbeat. I think Lane Kiffin is a guy that you know that they should probably talk to. He's not a guy I would necessarily want to hire or have running my program, but he's definitely a name, and he can recruit. And I think Kiffin would potentially take that job. Couple others, I would very seriously consider Matt Campbell up at Toledo. I think he's a very bright young mind in the game at this point. And again, you're looking at a guy that could come down into the Miami area and try to recruit and would connect, I think, very well with recruits. And then I think, you know, they would potentially talk to Kirby Smart and Jeremy Pruitt, neither of whom I think would be likely to take that job because they're used to a lot more support. And I think they want those guys are going to want jobs that offer them more administrative support and more perks, more similar to what you see at Alabama or at Georgia and so on. I mean, if Pruitt's complaining about the support staff at Georgia, I God knows what he would be saying at Miami. But in any case, I think they have a list of guys that they could look at that would at least consider that job. Like I said, I think Tom Herman would consider that job. Greg Schiano would consider that job. Cristobal would probably take it. I think Lane Kiffin would consider that job. So, you know, I think that they could upgrade their job. I think they could upgrade their position this year. The question is whether or not whoever they hire is smart enough to actually push for that extra money for the assistance and commitment in terms of upgrades on facilities and some other things that would need to be built into the contract and built into some things in order for that program to take a step forward. Because at this point, they just don't have the talent. They don't, and they're not able to attract the talent the way that they should. So it's going to be interesting to see. Again, I think this is the swan song for Golden at this point. I think the FSU game is, you know, to summarize, the FSU game is his last ditch effort to save his job, which is the dangerous spot for Florida State. I mean, we've seen this before. Florida State facing a team with its coach in peril, and if you think about it, the last four coaches to beat Florida State, I think it's the last four coaches to beat Jimbo Fisher in the regular season have all lost their jobs. So, you know, this desperation factor does play a part here, and it's going to be interesting to see if that winds up making that a more competitive game than it should be in terms of just comparing the two rosters. All right, let's go ahead and move into segment three, where we're taking a look around. We're going to do a little rapid fire look around the nation and sort of where we are a quarter of the way into the season, what we can learn this weekend, and sort of what we can expect as we move forward. Where does Florida State fit in the national picture at this point? And I think at this point that things are very cloudy. I continue to think that we're probably going to see at least one, if not more, two-loss teams in the playoff field this year. I remain convinced that there is not a truly dominant team in the country at this point. Although I think just as much as Ohio State was built up too high in the preseason. I mean, it was to the point where they got more hype in this preseason than I think Florida State did going into the 2014 season. And I think people forget how hard it is to repeat. People forget that, you know, they lost quite a bit, including Tom Herman, including their top vertical wide receiver, Devin Smith, which they have yet to recover from. I think that has been a big factor in why their offense has not been as effective this year. It's a very similar loss to what Kelvin Benjamin meant to Florida State in 2013 and then losing him for 2014 in terms of what that did for the offense. So I think now Ohio State is actually maybe a little undervalued. I think they're almost under the radar at this point, while people are talking about the latest and greatest, and of course in the SEC, but I think, you know, they still are a little bit, or maybe a cut above everybody else. But I think elsewhere there just is not a dominant team. I'm still completely unconvinced that Ole Miss is what they. I actually was more convinced that and more persuaded that Ole Miss was very top level elite before they played Alabama. But I thought Alabama looked like the better team in that game. They just turned it over five times, and they still only lost by a score. I think Ole Miss is probably a two-loss team, maybe three, as we move later into the year. I think Ole Miss may have their hands full with Florida this week. I'm very interested in seeing Vernon Hargreaves against the guy I think is the best wide receiver in the country, Laquon Treadwell. Regardless of what, you know, you think of the rest of the Ole Miss team, Treadwell and Kemdichie, the defensive tackle, those two guys are as good as anybody in the country. But I'm just not convinced that Chad Kelly, especially, you know, the first long touchdown that he had against Alabama is one of the luckiest plays I've ever seen. And that's the kind of throw where if I see a quarterback make that throw, yes, the result was good, but the process was so bad that it makes me think that if he does get pressure in big game situations, if he does face a quality secondary like what he's facing this week against Florida, I have my doubts about the long term at this point. The kid's talented. I'm just not sure he's quite there yet. And we're going to see a little bit more. I think even if they do roll through Florida, which I think they're going to have their hands full this weekend with the Florida defense, I think LSU is a team that probably gives them some fits. And I think, you know, I think Mississippi State at this point is better than some people might think that they are, because they were so overrated last year. So, you know, everything is so pendulum oriented in college football. I mean, team goes from great to not very good. Great, you know, everybody's great, and then everybody sucks. I mean, this is just that's college football, and I think generally speaking, the truth lies somewhere in the middle. I'm not persuaded that Baylor is going to make it through the Big 12 with fewer than two losses. I think they'll beat Texas Tech this week in a hangover after the close loss that Texas Tech had against TCU. Tech has some trouble recovering from that. And I think Baylor probably hammers them pretty good this week. But I think we're going to see Oklahoma. I think we're going to see West Virginia, Texas. Yes, Texas. Some of these other teams, Oklahoma State, some of these other teams in what's a pretty deep, pretty, pretty high parity Big 12 step forward. And I think we're going to see a two-loss conference champion in the Big 12 most likely. I still don't think USC makes it through without another loss or two. They just lack the depth, and their defense is not going to let them go through the year without another loss. I think their defense is gonna have another hiccup here or there. So we'll see with that. This Alabama Georgia game this weekend, I think, is going to tell us a lot, but at the same time, we're going to leave with a lot of questions because Alabama is built to stop what Georgia does. That's why I picked Alabama to beat Georgia in this game. I think Georgia may be the better team in terms of if each team played 128 other teams in college football, Georgia might end up with the better record overall. But in terms of the matchups between the two teams, I think Alabama's built to stop what Georgia does, and I think Georgia's still not quite ready up front to stop what Alabama does on defense. Now, the other thing is that we keep hearing people talk about the Alabama quarterbacks, and oh, the Alabama quarterbacks are the reason that they're having trouble. Jacob Coker's just been underwhelming. I think the problem's at wide receiver. Quarterbacks have been okay. Coker's not been, he's not been lighting the world on fire, but he's also had 11 drops. So wide receivers have 11 drops, which I believe is the most drops of any quarterback in the top 25. Their receivers have dropped a lot of passes, and they've been some blatant drops too. I mean, we're talking about, Tampa Bay receivers with Jameis Winston in week three kind of drops. I mean, the receivers have struggled with drops. I saw another stat from Pro Football Focus this week where out of 23 contested catch opportunities, Jake Coker's wide receivers, Alabama's wide receivers, have caught three. Three out of 23 contested opportunities for catches. Well, no wonder you're having trouble in the passing game. So, they're in some sense having even more problems with a young receiving core than Florida State is, with a slightly less young receiving core. And you're seeing why Pig Harrison and George Campbell and some of those guys have not yet been on the field at Florida State, because they know, as you're making some transitions and all of this, that inexperience at wide receiver can really hurt you. And until these guys are quite ready to take that step forward, you can have talented guys, but they can still hurt you with their inconsistency. And that's where I think Alabama is. Question is going to be how much it hurts them against Georgia and whether it's enough to make sure that Georgia actually wins that game. So I'm going to be watching that game. I'm going to be very interested in that game. I think LSU continues to lack a quarterback. I think Alabama beats LSU because, again, they're built to stop what LSU does. I think TCU probably loses three. I actually picked Texas to beat TCU this week. Yeah, I know it's crazy, but I think Texas is making some steps forward, and I think TCU is banged up enough that they're vulnerable. At least I think Texas covers in that game. A&M, we still don't know what they are. Clemson, we still don't know what they are. Notre Dame, at this point, given the injuries that they have, we don't know what they are. That Notre Dame-Clemson game, to me, is, again, it's too bad that's going to be played in such sloppy conditions, because that would be a great game in clean conditions with what those two teams like to do. But, can Clemson block Notre Dame's front? Can they block him enough to give enough time for Deshaun Watson to do anything? And can Notre Dame block Clemson's front? Can their receivers get open against Clemson's secondary? And can freshman Deshaun Kizer actually do what he needs to do on the road against a very good Clemson defense? And how good is that Clemson defense? We don't know, because the only team of the pulse they've played is Louisville, and Louisville's pulse is unsteady, we might say. So, I mean, as many questions as Florida State has coming into this point in the season, I think everybody else has the same kinds of questions. This is one of those years where I think we're going to see a lot of teams that go into that last quarter of the year with two losses, three losses, and so on. And we're still going to be, I think, week nine, we're still going to be debating who the top six or seven teams in the country are, given, who's lost to whom. Interesting thing is Florida State's in great position given their schedule. You get through Wake Forest here, you get through Miami. Georgia Tech looks like they might be more vulnerable. We'll find out a little bit more this week. We don't know where Florida State fits nationally, but we sure as heck do have some sense that they have a chance to do more given the schedule and given the room for growth and given some of the stuff that they've shown up front on both sides. They've got a chance. So we don't know where anybody fits, But we do know that FSU, in terms of talent, is in a position where if a few things break right, it could be pretty surprising in the second half of the year in terms of what the expectations were coming into the season. All right, let's move into segment four. And again, this is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, VSporto Channel. I'm Jason Staples. Segment four, I want to just make a couple observations about recruiting. We're going to have a bigger show about recruiting early next week, where I'm going to bring Wayne McGahee from Noel Digest on the show, and we'll talk a little bit more about where Florida State stands recruiting-wise coming into the Miami week, which is a huge, huge visit weekend for Florida State, not just for this year's class, but for the next year as well, and even into the 2018 class. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk the last couple weeks about whether about Florida State struggling on the recruiting trail. Why is Florida State struggling so much? And, oh, it's because, you know, they've got an old staff. Or, oh, it's because, you know, somebody like Lawrence Dawsey, just, you know, he's not getting it done in Tampa. And, you know, you only have one really good recruiter on the staff other than Jimbo Fisher, who's at the head coach position. You only have one good recruiter, one, you know, great recruiter among the assistants, and, you know, they need some new blood. You know, there's been a lot of talk about this the last couple of weeks, and I really don't agree with that overall sentiment. First of all, I don't think things are nearly as bad on the recruiting front as many seem to think they are at this point. I think Florida State's class is awfully good at this point, and I think who they're in on moving into the second phase of the recruiting season is perfectly good. I think they'll end up with a top three or four class, and I don't think they would wind up trading their class with anybody. And part of that is, again, it goes back to evaluation. You look at the classes at this point. There's a three-star recruit on Florida State's radar right now, and one of their commits right now is a three-star recruit, Jamal Couch, kid from Phoenix City in Alabama. He's a three-star. And I'm telling you right now, I would take that kid. He doesn't even play the position in high school. He generally plays more on the offensive side of the ball. But he's going to be a linebacker at Florida State. I would take that kid over all but maybe three or four linebacker prospects in the country. Evaluation matters. And when you start looking at how guys fit in systems and so on, I think Florida State is still in pretty good position. Now, I do think there may be one change, maybe two. I mean, you may see an assistant coach get a head coaching job after this year. But, you know, there may be a change here or there at the assistant in the assistant ranks. But I don't think that we're in a position where we have to start saying, well, Florida State needs to make some changes if they're going to be able to recruit long term. I just don't think that's the case. Now, again, we'll talk more about this early next week on one of our early week podcasts. But that's just some preliminary thoughts. I just don't think things are nearly as bad as they seem. I think Florida State's going to be fine in this recruiting class, and they're shaping up to have a really good one the year after as well. So, you know, I just think, again, things are rarely as bad as they seem. They're really rarely as good as they seem. Well, that's going to do it for us today. Now, before we get out of here, just a reminder that you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. You can follow Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio for the latest on FSU sports. And, of course, make sure to catch our next podcast, which will cover instant reactions to the Wake Forest game. And one other reminder, the VSporto Seminole Sports Radio app is finally available on both the iOS Marketplace and Google Play. So definitely make sure you pick that up. That's the best place to listen to this and other Florida State podcasts. Once again, I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, VSporto Channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.